The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Sky Broadband. Get the power to do more with Sky's best ever Wi-Fi.
Now, just over a year and a half ago, Rosie Manigan was a passenger involved in a serious car accident in Brazil. Rosie was left in an induced coma for a month, was flown back to Ireland and has been in recovery since. She's talking to us today about her accident and her recovery, which is very important. And she wants us to know how such a life-changing incident doesn't mean it's the end of the life that she knew, but how through perseverance and hard work and the graft of it, she can get back to being the person she is. Good morning to you, Rosie.
Morning, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Or should I call you Dr. Rosie Mangan?
Because no, Rosie's fine.
Okay, tell us why you were in Brazil in the first place.
I was in Brazil because by trade I'm an entomologist, so I'm a researcher that studies insects.
Yeah.
And I was there to collect the insects to bring them back to Scotland to do research on them. But then, unfortunately, on my second day there, I was a passenger in a car that was in a road traffic accident.
And that was in November 2019, so very recently.
Yeah, yeah. It was 15 months ago, actually. It's kind of mad to think that's how long it's been. Yeah. I've made some really good strides in those 15 months because I've got access to really good rehabilitation.
Yeah, and brilliant. We've come to that. Do you remember anything at all about that crash?
I remember being quite nervous in the car beforehand because I thought the drivers on the road were a bit haphazard. Yeah. And I actually remember texting my fiancé at the time and saying that I was quite scared. And he showed me that message more recently. I was like, God, I wasn't imagining that it really was dangerous.
It really was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's lucky you're talking to us at all today, but you don't remember really much. What are your memories of what happens afterwards?
Well, I got put into a medically induced coma. Mm-hmm. And I don't really remember too much of that time, except when they stopped the sedation. And then I guess I was coming to slowly but surely. And I really remember hearing my boss Luke's voice, my mum's voice, my sister's voice, and Connor's voice. And then my friends all sent voice notes to Connor and my mum, and they were playing them all the time. And I think, especially when the sedation got stopped, my family were kind of screaming at me to wake up all the time and to open my eyes. I remember the Brazilian nurses kept shouting, "Open your big blue eyes, Josie Mary," every day. And I got a bit fed up with that because I couldn't open my eyes.
But what's incredible is that you have a memory of that, even though you're in a coma. And to anyone looking on, they were wondering whether you could hear anything.
Yeah. I think that was encouraged to my family to talk to me constantly.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's kind of an altered state of consciousness. So you're gradually waking up.
It's incredible. And Connor, we should say, is your fiancé.
Yeah.
But your mum flew out pretty much straight away.
Yeah, my mum and Connor flew out straight away. And then my sister followed, I think, a week and a half later.
And they get you home?
Yeah, I flew home in an air ambulance with my mum. It's probably the only private flight I'll ever be on, and I was fast asleep for the whole thing.
Okay, right. The coma went on and then you came home. And we should say, by the way, because you were over there, you weren't over as a holidaymaker. You were, as you say, an entomologist doing something quite serious. You were fully insured and everything to be treated and get home. What do you remember then when you get into the Mater hospital and then it's your father's voice you're hearing?
Yeah, that's when I knew something had changed because I couldn't hear any Portuguese anymore. And I remember hearing my dad's voice. And that was like, I knew something was different. And I was like, wait a second, Dad's here. And then it's when I really started to fight to wake up. And sure enough, I'm not sure of the exact days, but I woke up about a week. I think it was a day or two later, I started making hand movements. And Connor said, I finally started smiling because I had a massive grimace on my face the whole time I was in Brazil. And I started smiling. And then there was a tracheostomy going into my lungs so it could help me breathe. But then when I woke up from my coma, I was really agitated, just wanted to get rid of that. And I tried to pull it out a few times. So I have to say to the poor nurses that were looking after me, I must have been a nightmare.
But it's interesting, you remember the fight that you were battling to wake up.
Yeah. Connor said one of the last things I did before we left Brazil, I couldn't speak, but I was mouthing to him, help me, help me. And I think I just knew that I wanted to get better from straight away when I woke up. I was like, this is not going to beat me.
Wow. When you did wake up, as you say, the nurses, the first thing you did was you're swearing.
Oh, there was a lot of cathartic swearing. Oh, my God.
I think that's understandable. Because you were fighting to get out, weren't you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, while you're in the coma, what was the kind of prognosis? How did the doctors, what were they kind of telling your family, I suppose?
Well, I don't know what the medical term is, but I think I would describe it as I was pretty goosed.
Yeah.
I didn't look great, but yes. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of lesions on my brain. I couldn't breathe independently. And a lot of my muscles, I couldn't move them anymore. So my left side was completely weakened.
Yeah.
And I guess then the different pieces of damage on different parts of the brain, they impact your emotions, your ability to communicate. Just, it's very complex. But then getting help in hospital and later in rehabilitation helped me overcome all those challenges.
I mean, you sounded amazing today, considering that at the time, the doctors weren't even sure whether you would be able to talk if you woke up. How long has it been since your discharge, since you were left out of the matter?
I left the matter on the 20th of March, 2019, so a year ago. And then I went to the Specialist Rehabilitation Unit in the National Orthopaedic Hospital in Kappa.
Yeah.
And I was there for 7 months. And since I've come home, I've been working with Acquire Brain Injury Ireland and the community rehabilitation with the HSC. And we're very lucky here in Taoiseach because it's excellent service. But unfortunately, that's not the same around Ireland. That's something I'm trying to campaign to change now.
Yeah, because there's quite a lot of brain injuries every year in this country, isn't there, that we probably don't hear enough about?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact numbers.
19,000, it says here in front of me, and that's the number from Acquired Brain Injuries Ireland. And it is Brain Awareness Week, so this is the campaign to spread awareness. I mean, tell us how fortunate you were in terms of the treatment that you got. If you bring us back to those days, it's only a year ago tomorrow. The rest of us were trying to cope with lockdown. You were coping with getting your life back and getting almost every facet of your life back.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about when I got to rehabilitation unit.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit up in a chair for more than 2 hours.
Right.
Because it was so painful. I couldn't walk. But, you know, 7 months later, I was walking. I mean, I'm still not walking perfectly independently, but that was a great stride to make in 7 months. And I couldn't speak for long periods of time, but I learned how to give lectures, which I used to do in my job in Scotland. And I've actually spoken at 2 conferences since I've left hospital this year.
Wow.
And I think that's a really good example of the great strides brain injury survivors can make if they have access to services at the right time.
Yeah.
And I definitely put services as one of the 3 things that have been really fundamental to my recovery. I'd also say I'm as stubborn as they come, so being stubborn definitely helps. And I've had great family and friends support as well.
We can hear it in your voice. I mean, you've tremendous fight in you.
Yeah, I think so. I think I might be the most stubborn woman in Ireland at the moment.
Well, that's the most positive review of stubbornness I think I've ever heard. But the services were very important. You had psychology sessions, you had occupational therapy, you had vocational training. This is not really available to everyone, is it?
Unfortunately, it's not. Mm. And that's something I'm really trying to change at the moment. I wrote a letter to the President of Ireland,
yes.
Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, Stephen Donnelly. I'm sure he's probably sick of hearing from me, but I'm really campaigning that if neurorehabilitation is available throughout the community for everybody, everybody can make great strides to change. And they can live their life to its full potential.
And the early intervention, you say, is really important.
Absolutely.
Do you sign those letters, yours, Stubborn Rosie? And they go, oh yeah, there's Rosie again.
I think just when I think about the friends I made while I was in Kappa in the Specialist Rehabilitation Unit, and like a bunch of people were like myself, Andy, John, Kathleen, Eileen, we've all made great strides. because we got access to timely rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And that should be the case for everybody. Because only 9% of patients with brain injury get moved into rehabilitation. But I'm determined to turn that 9% into 100%.
Yeah. Where are you at the moment, Rosie?
I'm in my parents' house in County Offaly.
Lovely. So you moved back in with your parents?
Yeah.
And, I mean, what is your day-to-day life? What kind of difficulties are you facing now?
I'm just still trying to learn to walk independently. Mm-hmm. And I have to exercise extreme patience because it's a slow, steady race. As my rehabilitation consultant says, Rosie, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And yeah. He's dead right.
Some people might be driven mad by those things because we're not the most patient crowd, given the way the world has kind of constantly told us to keep moving forward. But you managed to prepare yourself, I suppose, for that battle.
Well, I do have to be honest. I have days where I'm sitting in my room and I'm swearing cathartically like it's going out of fashion. Yeah. And then you have other days where it just goes smoothly and you have a win and you're like, yes, that worked today.
Very good. It's those little battles, little victories along the way. A bit of shouting out loud. That does no harm.
Lots of swearing every so often.
We could add that one too. Stubborn, sweary Rosie. So the main reason you're talking to us today is you want all these opportunities, don't you, for brain injury survivors in this country?
Yes, absolutely.
What are the three things you think have been vital for you on this trip?
Access to services is number one. Mm-hmm. And timely access to services. Because rehabilitation is challenging every day. Well, I mean, brain injury is challenging every day. So rehabilitation should be every day too. And that's what I want to change in Ireland.
Well, look, we listen and we hear you loud and clear, Rosie. As you say, it was a life-changing injury. But the key word is life, that you're still alive. And do you think about the person you were, or do you just look ahead? How do you get through that bit?
I've spoken to my psychologist, Brian, about this, and I don't find myself angry about the things I can change. The crash has happened now. But you know what I can change? I can change my recovery going forward. And if I approach it with an enthusiastic and motivated approach it in that way, it's going to be so much more fun for me and the people I'm working with. And I generally, I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I don't think they're too unhappy being in my company. At least I hope not.
I wouldn't think so. There's a text coming in, 51551 is the text. Mary in Cashel says, what an amazing lady. Too many people give up hope. She's an inspiration. We need young, fabulous people like Rosie.
Oh, thank you.
So there you go. I mean, we can hear the strength in your voice. I mean, I'm sorry for what happened, but also we're delighted to hear about your recovery and the attitude that you have, that you're helping yourself, you say, day by day, but you're also out to help other people as well.
Absolutely. You got to make lemonade out of lemons, so.
And you can swear while doing it as well. Why not?
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Dr. Rosie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this morning. And for those who want to find out more, abiireland.ie, Acquired Brain Injuries Ireland, is one of about 30 different organisations. We should give a shout out to the HSE in the Midlands as well, in fairness, who did what they could. But it'd be great to have those services for everybody.
Yeah, ABI is fantastic. They really focus on person-centred care and they think about what you want to achieve in your life and they help you to do that. And it's a really special service. And again, the HSE are exactly the same. I can't speak about both of those services highly enough because they're fantastic.
Great.
And we're so lucky to have them in Ireland, but we need more of them for everybody.
Listen, thanks a million, Rosie, for speaking out. And the best luck with the fight. Keep roaring at the ceiling.
I will.
We'll take
thanks
a wee,
so much.
Thank you very much. We'll take a wee break and we'll be back with our competition. Actually, we give a reminder, will we, for that phone number? It's 1850 715 900 for the Just Eat vouchers. £50 back after this.